slide that over here.
What?
Parks and Rec. Maybe that.
That's Fireman. Parks and Rec's the other one.
Fireman.
It's going to be a big town.
I'm out of town.
Test check. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the City Council meeting, City of Arroyo Grande, and also the Redevelopment Agency for the City of Arroyo Grande for Tuesday, January the 8th. Roll call, please.
Council Board Member Costello.
Here.
Council Board Member Guthrie.
Here.
Council Board Member Arnold.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Vice Chair Fellows.
Here.
And Mayor Chair Ferrar.
Here. Item 3 is our flag salute. We have this evening the Knights of Columbus that are here to lead us in the flag salute. And if you would, please remain standing for our invocation. Pastor Robert Banker from the Open Door Church is here this evening to take care of that for us.
Ladies and gentlemen, please place your hand over your heart. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Shall we pray? Again, our loving Father, as we approach a brand new calendar year this year, we pray that we might look forward to it with great anticipation, that we might find many joys and many happinesses in this year. And Father, we just pray that we might accept them very graciously and that we might look forward to them with hope. But we know also that there's going to be times of difficult times. And Father, we pray that you'd give us the strength and the courage to face those times also. We pray for the council, and we thank you for their dedication. We thank you for the fact that their family allows them this time to spend on the city and away from home.
Come on back up and let us know what Knights of Columbus is up to.
Thank you, Mayor. It is truly my honor to be back here again representing our organization. My name is George Majue, and I am the Grand Knight for the Knights of Columbus, Council 1375. And I don't know how many of you have been around Arroyo Grande, but the Knights of Columbus on February 28th will begin its centennial year. We have been in Arroyo Grande for 99 years now, and we'll be starting our centennial year, February 28th, and we'll be planning a wonderful celebration another year from now when we'll celebrate our 100th anniversary. We have lots of things that are going on within the city that we're involved in. Many of the things that we do are not necessarily well known. We do things not only in our parish community with St. Patrick's Church, but we also support the Alpha program. We support Special Olympics. We support a variety of other organizations, the Boys Club and Girls Club. We also raise money for the Girl Scouts and a lot of the summer camp programs, etc. We do have a big fundraiser for those who want to take care of your sweeties for Valentine's Day. We have a big dinner dance coming up the middle of February that will be held at St. Patrick's Church. But enough about that. I'd like, with your permission, to introduce Bob McLean, who is a 45-year resident of Arroyo Grande. And this coming Saturday, he is celebrating his 65th anniversary as a Knight of Columbus. And next Monday, he's celebrating his 84th birthday. He's a 45-year member of Arroyo Grande. And please, with your welcome, Bob McLean.
Hey, Bob.
I'm proud to be in this area. And, well, I better just let it go at that. Thank you very much.
Did you know he was going to put you on the hot seat tonight, Bob?
No.
And again, Knights of Columbus do thank the City of Arroyo Grande for your wonderful support for our endeavors, and we appreciate everything you've done for us. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, and we appreciate the work that you do in the community and through the church. It's a pleasure to have you as part of the community.
So thank you very much.
We'll see you back again.
You bet. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, that takes us to item 5 tonight, special presentations. We have none. We'll move to item 6, agenda review. Move that all ordinances presented for introduction or adoption be read in title only and all further readings be waived.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Discussion? Hearing none. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion carries. That takes us to item 7, community comments and suggestions. This is an opportunity for any member of the public to come forward on items that are not published on the agenda. As you know, the Brown Act restricts the council from taking action on items not published on the agenda. We would ask that you be mindful of the three-minute rule and please address the council as one body. Anyone who would like to come forward on community comments and suggestions, once again, items not on this evening's agenda. Okay. Seeing none, we'll close community comments and suggestions. We'll move to the consent agenda, item 8. Before I poll the council, this is also an opportunity for any member of the public to come forward on any item on consent. So anyone in the audience would like to come forward on items 8A through 8I, this would be an opportunity for you to do so. Okay, no one? We'll close public comment on the consent agenda. What is the will of the council? Any items this evening?
8H. H, pull H.
H? Okay, we have a request to poll 8H. And before we do that, I will entertain a motion for approval of consent items 8A through 8I with the exception of 8H.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Anything in there to read this evening, Mr. City Attorney?
No.
Okay. Tim didn't tell you that I put you on the spot rather quickly going through this process. He didn't tell you that. You? Well, that fine's going to be huge. All right. We have a motion and a second. No further discussion. Roll call.
Council Board Member Costello?
Yes.
Council Board Member Guthrie?
Yes.
Council Board Member Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Vice Chair Fellows?
Yes.
And Mayor Chair Ferrara?
Yes. Mayor Pro Tem, item 8H.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I've had several conversations with the city manager about the SHIRT program before. I think it was back before we realized that we're in kind of a budget shortfall situation this year and for a while. I think it's a great idea to have the city SHIRT program, and I'm wondering if maybe we could look at the concept. And
because of that concern, we are not proposing it for this year, but the proposal includes purchasing the shirts in next fiscal year. We are excited about the proposal. We think it'll go a long way in terms of presenting the image that we'd like to present in our city services. But we, too, are very concerned about the current budget situation given the current state of dropping revenues. And so I think our proposal is similar to what Mayor Pro Tem Fellows is saying this evening. We're really seeking direction from you. If you support the concept, that would let us continue to plan and develop a more specific proposal of what we'd be purchasing. We will hold off any purchase. We wouldn't be appropriating any money to be spent in this fiscal year, and we would be bringing that appropriation back to you as part of the changes for next fiscal year. So you'd have another chance to review that and make sure that we have the money in the budget at that time, given you know, the things that we'll be going through in our budget planning in the next few months.
Okay. So I think the staff report refers to the 08-09 budget, right?
We're proposing it for the first of 08-09 budget, but we'll evaluate that at that time if we still feel that we're constrained. And it's a pretty small budget item, but it's still important. We're, you know, obviously looking at all expenses and trying to cut everything we can. So if we're still having problems at the beginning of that budget, we may turn around and propose that it be delayed further. But that's where we're targeting right now.
Okay.
Okay, thanks. Then I move to approve item 8H as explained, proposed by the city manager.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Further discussion on 8H? Hearing none, roll call.
Mayor Pro Tem Fellows?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Costello?
There's an amended conditional use permit. As you know, this project is at 991 Rancho Parkway. It's going to be the Chili's restaurant, formerly the Vignettos restaurant. A little background. On December 12, 2006, the City Council approved an amended conditional use permit allowing the renovation of an existing building for the use as a Chili's restaurant. At that time, the project added 940 square feet of dining area to the north side of the building. And at the time, the applicant chose not to utilize the 540-square-foot existing patio on the outside of the building. Tonight, the applicant comes to you asking to be able to utilize that 540-square-foot patio. The project will access the patio utilizing the existing doors, and there'll be no exterior changes to the building. The floor plans have changed slightly to allow utilization of the doors going to the patio. The project will add a total of 36 seats at six tables. On the screen behind me is the old floor plan for your reference. You can see that the food preparation area and the dining area. And if we look at the new floor plan, the food prep area stays the same, slight rearrangement on the tables, and then you can see the tables out on the patio. Because utilizing 540 extra square feet, the parking requirements for the project changed. At this time, they are required to provide 47 parking spaces. The project remains unchanged, supplying 65 ORAS Engineering. They did conclude that there was adequate space in that center. However, to ensure adequate parking in the overall Phase 2, Council further determined that Building I-2 should be a professional office use and that 5,500 square feet of retail in Pad I was transferred to Phase 1 across Rancho Parkway. On December 4, 2007, the Planning Commission considered this project and recommended that the Council approve the project with minor changes to a condition of approval. I'll discuss that now. The Planning Commission, in general, was concerned. They see that Chili's will be very successful. We know that Trader Joe's is successful. They were concerned about parking at peak times, that this parking lot would become full. This parking lot, as we see at Trader Joe's, is generally full, and that parking will start to encroach into this A.G. Edwards portion of the center. So they were concerned, one, of pedestrians being able to come from these parking spaces safely over to the Chili's. They recommended that a crosswalk be painted at the front of the entrance to the Phase 2 of the center. Secondly, they looked at pedestrians being able to cross if they parked in the Chili's parking lot to get over to Trader Joe's and vice versa. Staff originally recommended that a wire fence that's in place now be removed to avoid any future fights over parking territory, but the Planning Commission wanted to see a split rail fence put in this area with two openings so pedestrians could easily cross because of a substantial change in the topography from the height of the parking area getting down to the street level. This would require changes to this landscape area, and it would probably result in a rather large structure or a lengthy structure in order to make this up to ADA standards. Also, over between Trader Joe's and Chili's, there's another slight change of grade, probably a difference of 18 inches, but the distance is so short that you probably couldn't make this an ADA access. You would have to do a ramp that went towards the back and back to the front. Also, staff went and talked with the manager of Trader Joe's, and we found that this fence was put up by Investec, the owner of the property, because there was a lot of pedestrian traffic through the landscaping. So this was an attempt by them to keep the landscaping in place. Staff also looked and found that it would be very difficult. There's no landing for pedestrians to start from or exit to once they cross this planter. You'd either have to lose a parking space, have people walk between cars, or potentially lose some landscaping. Because of that, and also it should be noted that the Planning Commission wasn't given the recently approved Pad I pedestrian enhancements that were approved earlier by the Council. So staff took a look at that and made a few suggestions. One, to keep the crosswalk that the Planning Commission recommends because it does aid pedestrians getting from Phase 1 to Phase 2. It'll also help pedestrians on the sidewalk here. Secondly, staff is recommending that the current infrastructure for pedestrians be utilized, and that lot work to go behind the trash dumpster to connect the sidewalk so pedestrians can utilize these sidewalks and make it all the way through the center. There may also be, or there will be a sidewalk that will be, a crosswalk that will be painted here, and there will be a little bit of curbing improvements so that cars aren't backing out into this path of travel. Here's a few pictures. Just to let you visualize where a sidewalk would connect here to make that connection in the center. And staff is recommending at this time a split rail fence that matches the split rail fence that you see throughout this development with no pedestrian openings. That way it would encourage people to use the sidewalks in the center. One last part that hasn't really been addressed is if people park in this part of the center, habits would probably be to walk in the straightest line to the Chili's. Staff didn't recommend putting in a crosswalk mid-block on this private road, one for safety reasons with cars coming through, but the second is you can see there is quite a bit of change of grade, and to have a sidewalk with a landing starting here may be very difficult to get those slopes correct. And it would end up putting a lot of additional cost onto the applicant. So with that, the Planning Commission, just to be clear, recommends that the City Council adopt the resolution approving this amended conditional use permit with their changes. And what I just covered, staff does recommend, after we reviewed it, an alternative resolution. You have both resolutions with you tonight.
Going back to putting you were indicating a crosswalk here. I wonder, and I recognize that there's an ADA issue, but since we already have an ADA access point here, mm-hmm. are we required that this would be ADA as well, even though we have an existing ADA? Because I think you're right. Clearly, people are going to park here. They're just going to stream across this driveway, whether it's safe or not. And since we have the ADA, the access here, it seems to me that if we could do it without, because I recognize how difficult it would be to make it ADA, that even a regular sidewalk here would be an improvement because nobody's going to back here. Nobody's going to do this trip.
I asked that specific question to the building official and to other staff members, and the general consensus was if we're providing a path, it should be a path that's accessible to all. And I know this probably comes with the technicalities or interpretation of the ADA, and I'm not an expert in it, but I did ask the question, and that's the answer that I got.
Okay. Councilmember Costello.
Jim, I... Better? Okay. In reading through the report, it says that they're adding 36 seats at 6 tables on this patio. And yet, if I'm looking at it correct, can I borrow the laser pointer? Is that the additional area there?
That's the additional area. And if you
don't see 6 tables there, I see 9 tables there.
Exactly. So they had to reconfigure the interior of the seating plan to allow access out these doors. So what happened is they ended up losing some tables inside but added those out.
There's a net gain of traffic flow we're going to see there. And
right now we're just betting on the success of both Trader Joe's and Chili's, and it may be prudent to wait a little bit, get the restaurant open and see how it comes along, and then try to work with Investec in the future as they come forward with other plans. They seemed very amenable to staff's contacts with them, and it may be a option for you to consider.
And what exactly is staff's alternative suggestion?
It's to leave the park or this crosswalk or leave this situation exactly the way it is. I think people need to take some caution when they're crossing this private road. Really, the staff's feeling was putting in a crosswalk mid-block may give people a false sense of security in this situation. It's also a private road, private driveway. It may, these actions may put an additional liability burden on the applicant as well as the owner of the center. I'm sure anyone else could elaborate more.
Well, I was going to add on public streets, it's our policy almost never to add crosswalks in unprotected intersections. So Okay, this would be consistent with our normal policy for public streets.
Okay. Mayor Pro Tem, you had a question?
Jim, how high would that fence be, the split rail, what you're calling a split rail? Is it really a vinyl fence or is it a split rail fence? That's two questions in one.
Sure. I think I have a picture here somewhere of the existing fence. I know I saw one earlier. I took a picture of it.
I think I misinterpreted earlier. On page 4, that the third paragraph, Jim, okay. Staff alternative.
Okay.
The number 1 in about the center of that paragraph, it says these improvements include 1, painting a crosswalk at the entrance of the center. I assume that's parallel to Rancho Parkway. That one was good, yeah. And it says to assist pedestrian and disabled crossing Rancho Parkway. So what you're referring to there is the fact that people do cross occasionally Rancho Parkway, but then they need a crosswalk to, okay, thank you. That's all the questions I have right now.
Jim had a question with regard to the painted crosswalks that are being proposed. I know that when the center was first being designed, one thing that we didn't want to see was a lot of painted stripes mm-hmm. throughout the center itself. And that was one of the reasons why, even though we recognize the difference between a public and a private right-of-way or street, but the issue of a painted crosswalk that connected the two centers up here came up, and it was determined that the look that we have now was much more preferable and appealing, which is the tile accent. And so rather than having stripes painted in the asphalt all over the place, is it possible for us to look at either something that picks up this style, looking at either a tile accent or a stamped asphalt? And then make sure I understand this split rail fence that you're referring to. Is it similar in construction and style to the perimeter fence?
Correct. That's staff's intention, is that it would be a match of
fences. And that is a vinyl product, is it not?
I believe it's vinyl, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I know originally it was not, and we were having all kinds of problems with maintenance. Because the wood was shrinking, the rails were falling off, and so on and so forth. I'm not sure if going back through the maintenance process, they've replaced it with vinyl, but it's probably a good idea. Okay, those are all my questions. Anything else, questions or clarifications? All right, this is a public hearing. If there are members of the audience that would like to come forward, typically we'll invite the applicant first to come forward, and then anyone else who would like to comment.
Hello, I'm Robert Montgomery with Brinker International, 6820 LBJ Freeway, Dallas, Texas. Mayor and council members, thank you for allowing me to come forward here, and hopefully get this one right this time. I know this is the second time up for this conditional use permit, but all the suggestions that we had come to us through the planning and zoning meeting last month, we've taken in consideration. We've had her hands a little bit tied because we only are leasing just the building pad, and we have access to cross parking throughout the center, and Investec owns the center, so any improvements outside of our building facility is going to be on the street. As far as doing a stamped concrete or something like that, I can't speak. I can speak on our side saying yes, it'd be a good thing if we can do that. If it's what we have to do, I'm not sure Investec what their investment would be, what they're going to say, and or what's even entailing doing that. I'm not sure if they have to saw cut the concrete up and what cost are involved in that. But I guess that's something that could be approached. But other than that, we really appreciate considering this amendment to the conditional use permit. We, when we first initially took this on, we didn't think Chili's typically doesn't have patios, so we really thought patios wasn't going to be something we wanted at this site, even though it's already built and was there. But our after we got the conditional use permit approved, our area director in San Diego, I'm in Dallas, so the area director in San Diego came up and said, absolutely, we've got to have this patio. It's got ocean view. We've got to have this. So then we came back and talked to Jim, and he's been very helpful with getting us back through the processes here. So if there are any questions, though, we're willing to do what we need to do here, and we're trying to open this restaurant up in about 2 months, so we just need to get this, if we can, resolved and approved.
Well, to be honest, some of us were very surprised that you weren't taking advantage of that patio. So the fact that you're back and going to do that sort of meets our expectations. So it's a nice view from up there. It's a very pleasant place to be.
One thing I did want to add to you, I know there has been concern about parking over at A.G. Edwards. There's 65 spaces that we have, and, you know, our employees are going to park out in the center. We've got to deal with Investec to field left for us. There may be nights or special occasions when the A.G. Edwards there, we will have overflow in that parking or the Trader Joe's parking. So we don't really think there's going to be huge influx of traffic back and forth through there. So,
thank you. Anyone else who would like to come forward?
Steve Ross, 211 Garden Street. I was a little curious as to what the peak hours of operation, when they expect to get their most amount of customers in Chili's, and how that compares with peak time at when they're seeing their most customers at Trader Joe's, and if they overlap very much. It seems to me that if Chili's is going to be staying open until 9 or 10 o'clock, feeding people, that there are not that many people who go to Trader Joe's at 9 or 10 o'clock. So the parking situation might be not as critical if that is, in fact, what happens. Now, A.G. Edwards, I believe they close around 4 o'clock, so there shouldn't be any problem with taking away their parking. Should people overflow into there, it certainly won't interfere with their business. As far as the crosswalk crossing Rancho, I was curious as to what the new alignment of that's going to happen there in the egress and ingress and egress of the the way and the other, and there was going to be no left turn off of Rancho into the original center, and how that would affect ADA crossing. I don't know that you could put an ADA crossing and then have some kind of even low-raised curb and still make that correct. Those are just my questions. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. By the way, Steve, Investec has gone out to bid on the all of those traffic improvements and circulation improvements that you mentioned. I think there were 8 or 9 of them that were part of that original mitigation, and they're out to bid on that now. So hopefully that will occur simultaneous to the rest of the development of Phase 2. That's our goal. Anyone else who would like to come forward on this public hearing? Okay. Going once, going twice. We'll close 9A. And bring this back to the council. And Council Member Arnold, why don't you start us off?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Well, I can definitely support this. I think staff's recommendations are I can support this as proposed by staff and the Planning Commission. I guess the biggest difference being with the white picket fence not having any openings. I can support that. I would like to see if we can support the mayor's suggestion with using the stamped asphalt. I think is probably the most feasible and probably economical. I know when we did it back here in Olean Alley, there wasn't any kind of disruption, and I think the cost was fairly reasonable. So that would seem to be the most aesthetically pleasing and probably
problems with this. I think that staff's recommendations are sound. I don't have any objection to the stamped crosswalk. That'll be fine. I would like to make a couple of quick points, though. If we're talking about this crosswalk that is already there, that's mid-block. So a couple of things we might be thinking about down line after we experience this and see what's going on. If we find we do need a crosswalk, I don't think there'll be any major problem with adding another one over there. We already have one, so that's something that might be looked at. And if it turns out that there is a problem with traffic flow, personally, I think this is going to be a very successful establishment, and I think the parking is going to be a nightmare. But I don't think there's a whole lot we can do about it. The only thing we can hope is that the difference in hours between Trader Joe's and Chili's and A.G. Edwards will kind of balance each other out, and that we won't have tremendous traffic problems and tremendous parking problems. But I think we will have parking problems here. But if it turns that we do have a lot of problems, something you might consider just traffic calming in here, we might put a speed bump in there. Just something to think about down line if there's a problem. If there's no problem, obviously we don't put one in there. But if you have people that don't want to yield for the pedestrians, that's one way to make them slow down and might make things a little bit simpler. But I can support the measures before us. I can support staff's recommendations for the flow, and I look forward to this being a successful member of the community.
Okay, thank you. You're next.
I too can support it. I'll add that when Vignettos originally came through, they also weren't going to use the patio. They had the 5:30 to 7:30 will be the conflict area. Trader Joe still has quite a bit of business at that evening hour, and that'll be where the under parking occurs, and that we will see people open the A.G. Edwards. But again, we'll just let it happen. I think this is kind of the anarchist approach. We just let it happen, and then we'll deal with it afterward. But I can certainly support going forward this evening. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem.
Thanks, Mr. Mayor. I don't disagree with anything that my colleagues have said. I just want to bring something up that I'd like to, broach that hasn't been brought up before. I don't want to throw a monkey wrench into the works. I think it's an all-time project. But we've been leaning on staff to look at energy-efficient vehicles. What we have on the condition of approval 5 is heaters associated with the patio shall be permanent and not portable and shall be plumbed to the restaurant's gas supply. So what we're talking about is heating the great outdoors with natural gas heaters, which I don't see much in this area, perhaps in Dallas and perhaps in other cities. What I've seen at Marie, if you think about Marie Callender's restaurant, the back patio, or it's really a balcony, Giuseppe's, there's an Italian restaurant in San Luis, the name escapes me. They have a huge redwood tree, but they've got that enclosed, and they have heaters there. And Chevy's up the coast, every time that I see heaters used, especially propane or natural gas heaters, they're in an area that's enclosed in tarps and with awnings over the top. So the idea we should look at pretty soon, if not tonight, is I think when there are going to be outdoor heaters, because this is a cool area, it's not a warm area, not an area of warm evenings, more than 4 or 5 times a time.
I can support the project. I do believe that if it's possible and we can talk Investec into it, the stamped asphalt is something that we can do fairly quickly and fairly inexpensive. And machine comes in and heats up the asphalt and puts a stamp and a color on it, and it's a lot less arduous than trying to score concrete and come back in with tile. And the effect is the same as long as it's maintained properly. I agree with the comments that have been made in terms of the parking patterns. This is an issue that we have discussed so many times and for so long about the play between a new restaurant coming in and Trader Joe's, which is obviously a high trip generator. And as you recall, this issue came up when we were discussing how phase two was going to be developed in the whole pad eye thing, and so this is not new business in terms of the challenges for parking. And I do believe that, as the applicant indicated, as soon as the honeymoon period begins to dissipate a bit, then things will even out, and we will hope for some even distribution of parking, giving the hours of operation that vary, and will hopefully facilitate that. As to the Mayor Pro Tem's comments, I think that I think you may want to look at the possibility of some portable heaters as opposed to natural gas heater. Could have been one of the reasons why Vignettos didn't use it is the wind factor, and it does get a little breezy out there from time to time. So, and that also could have a bearing on whether we, for lack of a better term, hard plumb a heater versus a portable. Would in fact be the wind factor. So I think if we leave the notion with the applicant that we are concerned about energy and see what you can do in that regard, that would be my response.
I'd like to ask the applicant's representative one thing about gas versus radiant electric costs.
Okay. Could you come forward? The Mayor Pro Tem has a question. Thank you.
I wonder if you had experience at other Chili's restaurants with outdoor heating, natural gas or propane versus radiant electric heat, the cost of one versus the other.
Well, as I stated a little earlier, we really don't do a lot of patios. And this is I just know since I used to live here on the Central Coast myself, I was one of the ones that suggested, you know, I knew that there was a glassed-in patio. And I know that when I had dined here, I actually have friends that's in the restaurant business. They have heaters out as well. The problem with, you know, we have not experimented with different types of heaters that much because we just don't have a lot of patios. Our suggestion of doing the hard plumb heaters was for safety because we've been to restaurants before when they put umbrellas out on the patio and then they move the heaters over close to them. Next thing you know, the umbrellas have been caught on fire or burned. Or Brinker's a $4 billion company a year, and we're susceptible to all types of lawsuits and things like that. Portable heaters can get knocked over.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions?
If I could just comment on the restaurant, just to add to the portable. First, I'll point out that there are quite a few restaurants that do, in fact, have heaters that are not covered. The Spyglass is one. Lido's restaurant next door to us, the Cliffs Hotel, Sea Venture. You start going on the ocean, a whole bunch of patio areas there are that in fact have heaters, most of them portable. I will say one of the other downsides of portable is the storage issue. If you have to store a lot of tanks to then have a truck come and fill them up, and they're an ugly thing when they're sitting out because they're certainly not going to put them inside. So, you know, if you're going to have an outside patio, you're going to have to heat it or you're never going to get to use it is kind of where I go with that. Thank you.
Yes.
Just one part of the idea of the hard-plumbed heaters came from our chief building inspector. It's on. Came from our building official, a safety reason. We wanted to make sure that the heaters didn't get knocked over.
I don't know if your mic is on yet. Well, as far as the heaters go, you can, you know, proceed then with what the plan is, and then maybe staff can monitor and see what we can come up with, and might be mindful of the concerns of council. Okay. Then, if there's nothing else, I'll entertain a motion for 9A.
Mr. Mayor, I move we adopt a resolution of the City Council of the City of Royal Grande approving the amended conditional use permit 07-001. The applicant is Brinker International, Chili's Restaurant, 991 Rancho Parkway, using the suggested conditions for approval that were provided by staff.
I can second that.
We have a motion and a second discussion. Okay, hearing none, roll call.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fellows?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. That takes us to item 10, continued business. 10A is consideration of striping revisions for the Farrell Avenue Rehabilitation Project.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. As you may recall from last November, the council awarded a contract to install a water line and repave Farrell Avenue from South Halcyon to Golden West Place, the construction for which, is, as you may notice, is on the way. I do have a map on the screen here that I will point to from time to time. This is the project limits. This is South Halcyon to the right of the screen. Street width, however, varies, much like it did on Grand Avenue, from 38 feet in the section between, let me get back here, in the section between South Halcyon going west to Walnut, which is right here, and 44 feet, which is the width of the roadway from Walnut proceeding west all the way to Golden West Place. Now, the 44-foot section will provide for two travel lanes and parking and bike lanes on both sides. So, and that is what our current construction plans call for. The 38-foot section, however, will only provide for two travel lanes, bike lanes on both sides, and parking only on the south side or north side. I think what we've indicated on our construction plans is that we're continuing to have parking on the south side. At the council's request, the Traffic Commission reviewed the various striping options. They did that at the last meeting. They looked at the striping in the area. They looked at the city's traffic bike plan and recommended, after reviewing those plans, that that the bike lanes be installed on both sides from Walnut to Golden West Place, and that the bike lanes be installed on the on the south side only, in the sections on South Elm from Farrell. Let me get that. In this section here, so we would bring the bike lanes on both sides, going in an easterly direction on Farrell. Then at this point, when we hit South Elm, going northbound, and then traveling eastbound again on Fair Oaks. And that would bring bikers directly in line with the school, and then continuing on across Halcyon would meet up with the bike lanes that are on this side of Fair Oaks. I also had a chance to talk to, let me back up for a minute. If the council determines that putting a bike lane on South Elm is preferable, then we could take a look at that. There are a number of issues regarding putting in bike lanes in this area. Right now, the present configuration of the roadway is two travel lanes in each direction and then parking on both sides. So in order to put a bike lane in, we'd have to eliminate either travel lanes or parking. So we would like to come back to you at some point with further analysis on how to achieve that. I did get a chance to speak to someone from the Slow Bike Coalition. I believe you have a letter from their executive director. Their concerns are volumes and speeds. Of course, on the higher volume and speed roads, such as Grand Avenue, they prefer to have the designated bike lanes, which is the Class 2 bike lane. I think they were in favor of somehow the other section of Fair Oaks and the bike lanes there. So the recommendation this evening by what we're presenting as the Traffic Commission's recommendation would be to install bike lanes on both sides of Farrell, from Walnut to Golden West Place, or to the city limits, and that a bike lane be installed on the south side of Farrell between Walnut and South Halcyon, and that the north side be signed as a bike route. So with that, Mr. Mayor, that concludes my report, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you. Questions for Don?
Yes, one done in the segment that's between Alder and Halcyon. Were you eliminating the parking on the south side of the street as well? It's going the other way. You're going away from it. Between Alder, basically behind the school. I understand you're going to leave the parking that's directly behind the school.
This being Alder right here.
Yeah, but on Farrell.
Yes, right here.
You're going to leave the parking behind the school. Were you going to leave the parking on the other side of the street as well, or were you going to eliminate parking there?
No, the parking would remain on that side as well. Okay. Yes.
So there would actually be the same parking there is now all the way down Farrell. There just would only be bike lane on one side.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Clarify that. Thanks.
Okay. Any other questions?
Okay.
Go ahead.
Don, pardon me. I may have zoned out there for a minute, but does staff's suggestion now include Adam Fukushima's suggestion that is, I think, the same as Jim's?
Well, I think there's a our suggestion is that we continue down and that we allow people in doing so. I would suggest that we allow our contractor to do the striping between South Elm and the city limit of Golden West at this time, and then come back to the council at some further date, a future date, and analyze the impacts of putting bike lanes in this location.
The community
The
Community Development Department is somewhat concurrently working on potential streetscape plans for Elm that could accommodate this, so there might be some other benefits to do that. So while we're bringing forward the recommendation of the Traffic Commission, which we support, we also think this option that Councilmember Guthrie has mentioned is a good one and would be worth pursuing more. So it would make sense just to end the bike lanes at Elm for now, and then when we brought this streetscape plan forward, then we could determine what the best ultimate route is in that area to meet the school as far as bike routes to the school.
Thanks. I have a quick question, Don. You used the word allow. Is there some legal ramification to cyclists going up one of the other streets if they feel like it, up Elm and down Fair Oaks?
I don't think there's any legal ramifications, but they're certainly welcome. I mean, that's certainly something they can do. They can travel on any of the other streets. Yes.
Okay, Councilmember Costello.
And my question was just fairly similar to the one we just had. Was if we decided tonight that we didn't want to go continuing up
bike lanes, but I think it makes more sense to stop it at Elm. And then we don't have to go back and remove any lines later. We can just pick it up from there and determine which direction we want to go.
Okay. Any other questions on 10A? All right. This is not a public hearing. I think I got that right this time. we would invite members of the audience who would like to come forward and comment on 10A, if you so desire. Anyone like to come forward? Okay, seeing none, we'll close the public comment portion of 10A and bring this back to the council. And Councilmember Guthrie, we'll start with you this time.
Yep. Let me just kind of go over my thinking on the alternative I was suggesting. And some of it has to do with that if we use Farrell, we'll end up without continuous bike lanes, and particularly we'll have non-continuous bike lanes going into a school. For experienced riders, that's probably not all that big a deal. It just happens to be the correct lane that's going to be there, though, you know. But I just didn't like the idea that you would be riding along and the lane would just disappear on you. But there are other reasons why I think Fair Oaks is actually the better choice here. One is that you have controlled intersections on both sides of it. You have a four-way stop at Elm and Fair Oaks. You also have the light at Fair Oaks and Halcyon. Whereas on Farrell, you just are dumped right at the end. If you were trying to do, you'd be trying to make a left turn onto Halcyon if you didn't take some alternative route. So as a main connection, Fair Oaks is by far the better connection. Unfortunately, on the other side of it, it's Farrell that's the better connection going all the way down towards the ocean. So we do have to find some way to connect them. Walnut had some possibilities here, although I don't know that Walnut is wide enough to have parking on both sides and lanes on both sides. You would also now be making a left turn across an unprotected intersection in order to actually follow the route. So that's that's the reason why I think the alternative's there. I do think there are some problems with making Elm Street work. In fact, Don suggests another possibility would be to go around to Ash and around to Oak Park. I mean, it's certainly safer than it is now. But my proposal would be that we would just stripe the western portion of Farrell there, west of Elm Street, and have staff come back with sometime in the future in order to do the rest of the connection. That's what my thinking on it was. Thanks.
Okay. Councilmember Costello.
When I first looked at this, I was a little bit concerned about not having bike lanes, official bike lanes, going all the way up to the school itself. It seemed like that was a counterintuitive thing. That one of the big users of that bike lane would probably be students coming to school. So to get to within a block or two of the school and then drop the lanes bothered me a bit. I like the concept of going to South Elm, west of South Elm, and then stopping at this point and leaving it open for future consideration. I think Fair Oaks does make more sense as the route to connect to rather than Farrell. Walnut does not have enough space, I don't think, to have parking lanes and bike lanes also. So I'd recommend support tonight that we stripe from the west of South Elm with bike lanes, and then look strongly towards using South Elm connecting to Fair Oaks as the continuation of the bike path.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Arnold.
Hey, Mr. Mayor. I can support the recommendation as stopping at South Elm, although I will add that I think if we're talking about two different type of users, if we're talking about kids biking to the school, may more be inclined to use the thoroughfare road, which would be, if we're proposing Fair Oaks, because of the ability to cross the street at Halcyon. So I'm not sure this is an either-or. I have no problem in stopping at Elm today because I wouldn't want to see us removing on a road that we're finally now going to be getting back up to standard. So, but I think this may be a case of both. I'm not sure that we're really going to be serving the kids by not having a designated bike lane there when I think they're going to use it. And I do believe that Walnut is such an underused road that realistically, whether there's a bike lane there designated or if they're just riding down the middle of the street, the likelihood of that being a relatively safe route or on Pecan are both of them probably going to be very safe roads. So I'm not as sure that, again, South Elm is going to be actually a very safe route if we're going to have four lanes there of traffic as well, since that is a fairly fast road. But I can support stopping at Elm and then looking further in the future. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Mayor Pro Tem?
I ride a bike occasionally, pardon me, and I don't like the idea of thinking that there's any protection in a painted line. So I don't like the idea very much of going up Elm, but I do like Councilman Guthrie's idea of using Fair Oaks so it can continue across the school and then to the east. So I don't know what the heck. If Councilman Guthrie makes a motion, I would support his motion because he's the guy that rides a bike most often, at least perhaps amongst the five of us.
Okay. Well, he rides a bike most often in that area.
But, okay.
And for that reason, I can support Councilmember Guthrie's
idea is good. And if we want to pursue that, we would recommend ending the bike lane at Elm Street. And then we can come back with some additional analysis of how to stripe Elm and stripe Fair Oaks to continue the bike lane at that point, rather than have some lines up in Farrell that we have to come back and take out later if that was the route we ultimately select.
Okay, and who's going to get back to the Slo County Bike Coalition? Because I know Adam had a concern if we move with this alternative.
I think
we can get back to him. I would.
I wanted to offer that I did have a late conversation with Adam at the Bike Coalition, and I wanted to make sure that the council's intent is to still sign Farrell between Halcyon and Elm as a bike route. We would stop the lanes at Elm, but the bike route would be properly signed so that traffic can still continue. They were also supportive of the idea of share the road sign or share arrows that can be put on the pavement, but I think for striping purposes, the simple solution is stop the lanes at Elm, but sign the remainder as a bike route. Farrell is 40 foot in the limited section. Fair Oaks is 44 foot curb to curb from Elm Street all the way to Halcyon. So there isn't a problem on Fair Oaks with bike lanes. If we were going to spend the money on striping, the Bike Coalition actually thought if we would stripe Fair Oaks, then the connection using Elm would be the only segment that wouldn't have lanes on the street. But that is a bike plan solution.
The streetscape on Elm and the right-of-way on Fair Oaks and then come back with a whole plan for striping the rest of the area, which may include phasing at that time, but kind of reluctant to make that kind of decision right here when we have all these other options we'd like to look at. But I think we can come back fairly quickly to the council within the next couple months with a plan.
Is there any significant savings in not doing the striping? I mean, I have to admit I'm intrigued by Ed's idea of why not have more lanes than less lanes. Is there any – is it really an either-or? I mean, is there any significant expense with striping Farrell the way that it's proposed and then coming back and doing the other as well?
I don't think there's really any harm in putting them in now. I think the harm is then if we decide we want the route to go down to Elm, that means we've – to do this right, we'd have to go down and take those lines out, and it's just a little bit more of a hassle.
I guess because people would be confused by the direction.
Yeah, I think if we have a very common path that we want to direct people to, we want to make that very clear, and I think it helps to have signs and have the bike paths in a specific line directing them to where we want them to go.
All right.
Okay. Once you get them in, it's difficult to take them all the way out. There's usually hard to distinguish between lines that have been taken out and lines that have just faded.
Yeah.
Okay, anything else? Any other discussion? Okay, hearing none, I'll entertain a motion.
I'll move that we direct staff to stripe only the Farrell section, only the section on Farrell from Golden West Place to Elm Street. Review as quickly as possible the potential to then connect from that point to Fair Oaks.
Okay, we have a motion.
Second.
And a second. Discussion?
Just a moment. I want to thank the Traffic Commission for doing the work that they did. I just, it's not that we don't appreciate it, it's just that we want to look at it a little closer. So that's my only comment.
Okay. If there's nothing else, roll call, please.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fellows?
Yes.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Thank you. That takes us to item 11, new business. 11A is consideration of a status report and future direction of neighborhood services. All set?
Yes, set up. So, Mr. Mayor, members of the council, as many of you may recall, in 2004, we restructured the city's code enforcement program. And we think it's been very successful. However, demand has increased, and we thought it would be a good time to come back and do a status report for you and seek city council direction on strategies for the future. Now, when the program was reorganized in 2004, it included transferring the code enforcement program from the Community Development Department to the Building and Fire Department. The full-time code enforcement officer position was changed to part-time, which consists of 24 hours per week currently and is currently filled by two firefighter reserves. The police department at that time assumed responsibility for enforcement of all vehicle-related violations, and the community development department maintained responsibility for enforcement of any zoning violations. An interdepartmental task force was created to coordinate all the enforcement activities. Citation authority was established to improve compliance. And then lastly, the name of the program was changed from Code Enforcement to Neighborhood Services to better reflect a new approach of neighborhood problem solving, as well as a new emphasis on trying to achieve voluntary compliance through a more positive and customer-friendly approach. As the name of the program suggests, it's really designed to be able to respond to and address neighborhood issues as identified by the neighborhood. The one exception is illegal garage conversions and secondary units. In 2005, the City Council approved a strategy to proactively enforce these particular issues due to the life safety hazards that these problems were creating at that time. Staff believes the results have been very impressive. Since the program was restructured, the changes resulted in a estimated cost savings of approximately $35,000 per year. Meanwhile, cases handled increased from an average of about 110 per year at that time to now over 250 a year. At the same time, the percentage of cases resolved has significantly increased, and the number of complaints that we receive from people who received violations has also substantially decreased. In addition, public education activity has also been increased. At this time, I'd like to turn the presentation over to Chief Hubert and John King to give you a little more specific details about the status of the program, and then after that I'll finish up with a little bit of recap in terms of what we think the issues going forward are, and we have some
recommendations. Illegal construction issues, trash or solid waste accumulation, storing of inoperable vehicles. Noise violations and similar nuisances, obstructions of the public right-of-way, animal keeping regulations, illegal businesses and zoning issues, and home occupation regulations. I'll have John explain to you the case history through the neighborhood services.
Thank you, Chief. Good evening. This next slide, we've got a case history. And as you can see from 2005, when the restructure of the program, we've definitely increased in numbers, beginning at 110 cases per year prior to the restructured program. In 2005, 153 cases were documented. In 2006, 230 cases. And just last year, 251 cases. Thank you, Steve. All right. There's a breakdown of the types of cases that we handle most often and the numbers that we received in 2007. The highest number of complaints received was of signage issues, and we resolved 34 of these cases. Most of these cases resolve on a voluntary compliance rate, usually very quick to close. Following that is vegetation cases, and this can include the abatement of fire hazards, even hedge heights, and standing dead trees, things of that nature. So these cases can be quite large. Light issues, shining lights in neighbors' windows, things of that nature. 33 of those were documented. with 30 closed. Solid waste cases, that's 31 here, and that can include inside or outside of homes. These can also be somewhat significant in size. Illegal constructions next, with working hand in hand with the building department on these and the building inspector. We had 23 complaints with 16 cases closed. The next is vehicles, and this is not including the efforts involved with the police department, which is in a later slide, but we had 16 individual cases with 11 of our cases closed. Animal keeping cases is next, everything from horses to, you know, pigs and chickens, all in the city limits, and the specific requirements on each. So closing 100% of those cases of nine received and nine resolved. And home occupation permits, also nine received and nine resolved. On our proactive measures here with illegal secondary units and garage conversions included here, you can see a large increase in the overall abatement of these situations. In 2002 and 2003, only two cases were documented. In 2004, there were no cases documented. In 2005, only seven. And then in 2006, along with the program getting restructured, 56 cases were open all at once, and letters sent off all at one time. Workload increase, which they took in 97 cases in 2007, achieving a very impressive rate of 98% compliance on a voluntary level. And only eight of these remain open. I think they only had one tow-away case, so it's very good on their part. These next slides are before and after pictures of some of the more significant cases that we've had over the years. And I can answer any questions about them, but more or less, and the first one we're looking at here is a property enhancement case, being that it involves many municipal code violations. This one in particular, weed abatement issues, substandard living conditions on the inside of this structure. I believe the large pine tree there was dying or completely dead. And multiple departments had quite a bit of involvement on this case. And the after picture is quite significant. Weed abatement issues handled. The tree was completely removed. And I don't believe there was a garage conversion on this case, but a significant level of solid waste inside the house. So it's a good case to have closed. Another property enhancement case here. You can see, obviously, vegetation issues and exterior solid waste issues. Some of the things, obviously, to consider is just the age of the structure and how it stands up over time. There's other things to consider with paint and overall deterioration of the structure itself. But you'll see in the following slide, it's quite a difference here. Its original state, as you can see. Right. Several of our cases include solid waste, and in many of these cases, there's a good involvement of hazardous material accumulation. On this slide in particular, you can tell that the tenant was obviously a painter and bringing his work home with him. Easy enough thing to ask for in this situation. This cleaned up quite quickly, but it was surprising to walk in on this one. It's one of our yard car cases. Again, the police department handles all of these, but this is one of the older ones that was documented earlier on. And with these cases, you can see there's not just the situation of a car, but it adds to further situations such as weeds and also the possibility of a rodent infestation. So these types of cases are very important to get a quick grab on to get them abated. There it is, gone. And this last case here is a vision triangle case. It has to do with the visibility at an intersection, either of a driveway or a city street. Here's just a simple low-hanging tree branch, but with it there, it significantly blocks the view of pedestrians and motor vehicles. And after it, after that was requested by the property owner to limit up, you can see that it's quite a bit safer to traverse that intersection right there. So those are all the photos we have in this presentation.
Interest on the part of some members of the community and some members of the council for more proactive enforcement. Staff is somewhat concerned about proactive enforcement programs. The fear is that the caseload can escalate very quickly to beyond what we could handle. The normal experience in these type of programs is when you begin to go out and actively patrol for violations and issue those violations. A very common response by many of the individuals receiving the violations is that they feel that they're being singled out, and they often cite a lot of other similar violations around the community that they feel are consistent with theirs. This then obligates the city to go out and follow up on those obligations, and so you can see how in a very rapid manner that can escalate. Staff's concern is with our ability to effectively manage that type of program given our existing limited resources. It would also require additional staffing, which we don't feel under our existing staffing numbers that we would be able to staff that through a firefighter reserve position if we were to increase staffing. And we've been very pleased with the success of using uniformed personnel to perform this responsibility, and so we'd hate to go back to the old program structure. And lastly, it more proactive enforcement can result in some negative reaction and response from the community, and could, but at the same time, try to do that in a very strategic manner within the existing structure of our program now. And so what we are proposing is first to keep the majority of the program as complaint-based. But at the beginning of each year, we would come to council and ask for direction on prioritizing what you feel are the most significant code enforcement or neighborhood services enforcement issues, and then designate the top priority as the priority for that year for us to do a more proactive enforcement on. And what we would do is begin with public education activities, educate and communicate to the public, and then follow up with a more proactive enforcement where we would go out, try to identify as many of those violations we can, and then enter them into the system for an enforcement follow-up. In addition to that, what we would recommend this year as the designated top priority for the upcoming year is illegal temporary banners and illegal signs. We've experienced somewhat of a proliferation of those types of violations. And what that does is it causes some problem in our ongoing enforcement, because when businesses see that those banners or signs are up for long periods of time, then that leads them to believe that either we're not enforcing them or they're not illegal, and that encourages other businesses to do the same thing. So they are allowed. But what happens is if we get a complaint, it's been up a couple months. And so then we begin to track it for the 60 days. And so then it's already into 4 months. And then it usually takes us a little while to get the business owner to take it down. And so that banner could be easily up 5 or 6 months under our current process. So what we believe is not just this violation, but the strategy in general, is if we can each year pick one item that we strategically focus on and really concentrate on, and by the end of the year, we think we'll get a real handle on that particular issue, enough so that then the following year we could move on to another issue to focus on that maybe has proliferated and become a community-wide program. So that's kind of the basis of the philosophy. And that concludes our recommendations and presentation. We'd like to ask your direction in terms of approval of the recommendations, unless these folks have anything to add.
Okay. I have a quick question. If we designate a priority issue, is that designation then, does it remain in the proactive category? Is that something that we go out and, in other words, it's not complaint-driven, we go out and initiate that action? Is that correct?
For that particular year, it would then be proactive, like we did with the illegal garage conversions. That's kind of the example that's worked well. But the idea
is driven.
Yes.
Okay. Questions?
I'm just noticing that you still had 35 illegal secondary units last year. Do you think you're on the other side of that? I mean, that really is a priority because it's a life safety issue. Are there 35 more of them out there this year, or are there 15, or are there, my concern is if we take you off that actually is the number one priority.
Yeah. You can get at the numbers. Let me just talk about concept. I think we're recommending those. We would still continue to proactively enforce those, but we do believe that we're hopefully on the down end of it, where this next year won't be as much of a burden on our workload, but we would continue to have some proactive enforcement on those. We're certainly trying to catch them while the construction's still going on, because then they're a lot easier to deal with.
So secondary units would remain a proactive item?
Okay. That's correct.
Okay. Councilmember Arnold?
The signs and banners, I guess my question is, I saw that this was a council issue, and I know it's been one particular person's issue. I'm not sure it's per se been a council issue. And so I guess, was there any other thing that was considered as a priority for this year? Or really, do we only have the signs as kind of the hot button, and we really don't have a proliferation of any other issues that warrant this proactive action? And I guess if we don't, then next year, are you seeing something brewing, or do we hopefully maybe next year not have to be proactive on anything other than say that?
That are also problems that we probably could designate in the future off the top of your head.
Most likely vegetation management is always of concern. Quite honestly, this year alone, those cases increased quite a bit. But those are also handled through the fire station with another position, vegetation management officer. So signage, as far as neighborhood services, is ultimately what we have the most of, but it can be looked at as far as what else you'd like us to handle.
I'm not trying to drum up something. I'm asking if there were other obvious things that, and I guess the other piece of that is if you're out there talking to a business owner and businesses violate two or three different things, if we can maybe, while we're talking to them about the signs, mention that this is also something that we're aware of as a problem, and, while we're not out policing it as hard today, we may be someday, so that maybe we can even nip that before it becomes a big issue next year.
We should have probably laid out some other alternatives for you, and that's certainly the intent in the future when we do this. We kind of focused on this. This was clearly the one that's it's been hitting us the most. But in the future, we would come forward with four or five different things, kind of give you a detailed report of the status of those, how many cases we're receiving, what kind of problems are they creating, and then get your direction of this is the one we should target this year. That's the intent.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Did you have a question?
Yeah. I did have the same concern that Councilman Guthrie had, and I did assume that you would follow up on the holdover cases, and so that's good to hear that confirmed. Then I just had a question of either the chief or John.
Motorcycles, parts thereof, anything of that nature.
Thank you, John.
Okay. If there are no other questions or clarifications on the staff report, once again, this is not a public hearing, but anyone in the audience would like to come forward and comment on this item, this would be an opportunity for you to do so. Okay. Seeing none, we'll close any public comment on 11A and bring this back. And why don't we start with Councilmember Costello?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm pleased with the way the program's been working, and I want to congratulate you on the work that's been done. And I think that the approach that you're suggesting is a sound one for the future. I'm glad to see that you're listing public education as a part of this, because I think for the illegal signs and banners that we're seeing put up, it is an education process. And then I think that if some attention is paid to that, that's going to cut the enforcement necessary significantly. So I can support what's before us tonight, and including the identification of illegal temporary banners and signs as the priority for this coming year, and would look forward in future years to seeing a menu of potential issues brought to us.
Okay. Thank you. Councilmember Arnold.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I don't have anything further. I can support this as proposed tonight with the idea that in the future we would get some kind of list to choose from. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Councilmember Guthrie.
Yeah, I too can support it. I do think it's actually a good choice. I think it's the kind of thing among businesses when they see one person doing it, and the kind of thing that you can turn around, and it's the kind of thing that does proliferate, as you say. If one person does it, then everybody feels almost obligated to do it. So I can support it. I think it's a good idea. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Mayor Pro Tem?
I support it also. I would like to also say thank you for your presentation, John and Chief Mike. It's really wonderful to see on the screen for the public to see what their money's going for and how successful you've been. And I understand that that John, you and was it Rob in the past, and Tom now? Getting good marks for you dealing with folks out there. I appreciate that. So I can certainly support this.
Okay, thank you. And I would also like to echo the Mayor Pro Tem's remarks as well. And I think the three of you have congratulations coming. It's Steve, I think it was your idea to restructure this thing from sort of a very tenuous position a while back. And John, I've heard nothing but good things about the work that you've done in the field. And Mike, for championing and supporting the program. So, and I also want to include Rob, because especially on the garage conversions, that can be a difficult situation. There are all kinds of twists and turns. There is no rubber stamp solution. And what I see coming out of the balance between maybe a building and safety issue versus a development code issue is flexibility and a willingness to work with members of the community, and that's a huge positive factor. And the fact that I appreciate it, and I also believe that the focus for this year on illegal temporary banners, I wholeheartedly agree that there's been such a proliferation of these things throughout the community, and I think it's largely due to especially along Grand Avenue, some of the newer development that has gone in. Obviously, those businesses are trying to take hold, and they're not aware or mindful of the some of the restrictions that we do have on temporary banners. And to them, it's just open, free advertising, which is not a bad thing. But there is a degree of conformity that we have to consider. So, yeah, it's getting to be pretty neon-ish out there without the electricity. There's a lot of those things up. So I think that's a great first proactive area. And I also like the fact that you've included public education, because I look at public education as being proactive in and of itself. And I'm hoping that what we see in the coming year is a utilization of some of our media, like Channel 20, which I think we all agree is underutilized. And I think utilizing that media in and of itself is being proactive and will help a lot, particularly in the, what we're referring to as complaint-driven categories. So I can support what is being recommended tonight, and I would also, if possible,
Mr. Mayor, I move the adoption of staff's recommendations in three parts. Direct staff to continue with the current structure of the Neighborhood Services Program. Part two, approve the proposed strategy to annually identify priorities for proactive enforcement. And thirdly, identify illegal temporary banners and signs as a priority enforcement item for 2008.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Mayor Pro Tem Fellows?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
And Mayor Farrar?
Yes. Thank you. Okay, that takes us to item 12, City Council Member Items. There is one this evening, and it is mine, and it is a request to appeal the Planning Commission's approval of Architectural Review Case 07-007, and that's the two-story single-family home on White and Ide Streets. The applicants are in the audience tonight, as well as the architect, and I just want to preface my remarks by saying that I had a discussion with Mr. Cockshot this afternoon, and as well as the architect right before the meeting, and I want to make sure that that the council is clear on what my intention is here, and I don't want to predispose this this item, but I do want to give you some background on the reasons for bringing the appeal. If you watch the Planning Commission's deliberation on this particular item, you probably noticed two things. One, the commission was short that night. There were only three people. That in and of itself is from the standpoint of well and good. That is not the issue for me. The issue for me is the fact that this whole issue is related to perhaps a larger policy issue, which I'll refer to in a moment. But I think in terms of open government, of thoroughly vetting these significant issues, that we deserve to kind of hear this in a with a full council and a full public hearing. Now, that said, I need to focus on the other issue. And that is that as I listened, and I listened to the replay of it twice, as I listened to the deliberation that took place between the three commission members that were there, as well as comments that Rob made during that session, it was clear to me that what was being discussed was subjective interpretation. And that subjective interpretation, I think, has led to the applicants being directed, essentially, to proceed over the course of the past year and to develop the project that they have now. So, in short, the city in many different ways gave them a green light. And so they're at a point now where there is this interpretation that has arisen. Now, as I listened to the discussion, I heard various opinions about how the design guidelines in the village should be interpreted, and whether or not there is verbiage in the design guidelines that are open for debate and interpretation. And as a result of that, we have no guarantee that maybe the same interpretation wouldn't be made in the future. And so as I listened to the discussion, it became clear to me that that subjective interpretation was not perhaps within the purview of the Planning Commission. I believe that when you start getting into making determinations as to whether or not there should be, I think, to use Rob's term, correct me if I'm wrong, there should be a mansionization of the village in the future, or the design guidelines should be interpreted to either permit or not permit those types of structures in the future, verges much closer towards policy than it does interpretation of doctrine, which is the role of the commission. So the main portion of my appeal is to focus on that policy issue and then the extent to which we need to give specific direction to staff. And I understand that There's been some sense that staff felt that that direction could come from the Planning Commission, and I guess I disagree with that, particularly largely because of the discourse that took place with the Commission. And so from that aspect, I would want to bring this in front of the Council and, again, thoroughly vet it. Now, getting us back on the right policy track in terms of the design guidelines. So that is the main reason why I would want this to come back to Council. And when, that's about as far as I want to go in terms of a predisposition or a sense of a predisposition. So,
Mr. Mayor, can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Because as you know, I also looked at this project to whether or not to appeal it. And I came to kind of a similar, and I'm going to walk carefully here that I don't predispose anything as well, but my feeling was very similar to yours, that the applicant had done everything they've been asked for, and of all the McMansions that have been built, this is the nicest example of one that we're seeing, and so my decision was similar to yours, that I'd like to see the policy issue resolved, but I didn't think it was fair to do it through this applicant. And so I guess my question is there a way that we can do what you're asking separate from this applicant so that we deal with policy but not at the effect of the homeowner? I understand talking with the architect that there may be minor changes that they're willing to do voluntarily anyways, and if they're willing to do those either with talking with you on the side to, I guess, expedite their project at this point, which has been delayed, but with the understanding that we as a council want to deal with this policy so we can bring that piece back that is separate from the home. Is there any way to separate that, or is that something you're comfortable with?
Possibly. Steve, can you chime in on that, or Rob?
The intent of the item on the agenda was just to discuss whether this should be placed on a future agenda for an appeal or not.
Right, and that's why I was trying to give a rationale for that future agenda item.
I think it started off okay, but it started.
And I see our stand-in city attorney getting a little antsy there, so.
And you don't have enough dealing with me that I tend to make Tim very uncomfortable at times.
That's a good thing, though.
I guess the only other question then is there a way that we can expedite this so that maybe it comes back on our next agenda so that we can maybe deal with the two issues, one, deal with the house, and then at that point break it in a larger discussion of policy and then move the piece that needs to be moved along and the piece that really needs to be spent more time on?
I would say without deliberating and discussing it tonight, if you just want to give us direction, these are the things that you would like us to have in your staff report so that you can consider the appeal, I think that would be appropriate. Is that given what you're looking for, maybe?
Yeah, and I would like emphasis on policy interpretation of the design guidelines and ways in which we can clarify those guidelines so that they are less subjective. And if you recall, I think when we put those design guidelines together, I made the remark back then that in some instances, the term guidelines themselves are so... I think I would like to see that in the staff report. And then, any discussions at all that you can have with the applicant or the architect that might, help things out a little. But, that would be, in my mind, that would be secondary. The main issue for me staff report would be that policy clarification or at least a strategy to help us achieve that. So I guess what I need from the Council tonight is consensus to bring it back.
I have no objection.
I can support it.
Okay. All right.
Mr. Mayor. I can support bringing it back and looking at it. I definitely think we should. You mentioned, I think the City Manager mentioned,
what would we like to see in the staff report? And I just wanted to let you know what I asked him for earlier today. There are six new homes on Whiteley that have been built in the last couple of years at least. One's in the process right now, and that's Mrs. Prim's house on the corner of Whiteley and Poole. I'd like to know how large those homes are. I'm pretty sure the one by the creek is fairly small, but I'd like to know the square footage, pardon me, of the other homes. On Whiteley, down on the south end, there's the one behind the great big, I think it's an avocado tree. It's fairly new. Across the street from that, there's a remodel that I think has a couple of units. It's white. That's new. And then, of course, the two homes that Pace has built, as well as Mrs. Prim's house.
Any other suggestions for the staff report? Okay. Did we cause you too much pain?
Sure.
And item 14 is council communications. Anything?
I hate to disappoint, so I have something. I would like us in the future to continue the discussion regarding heating the great outdoors without enclosing heaters. I'd just like to rebut Mr. Guthrie's comment, the fact that just because PISMO does it, doesn't mean it's right, even though they do it all over the place. And I'd like to see if we can have a longer conversation about that sometime in the future. Space heaters, outdoors.
Okay. I do have a couple of things. And that is we need some council coverage. And one is for our Parks and Rec volunteers, and I understand this is going to happen during a pretty bad week. A lot of folks are going to be in Sacramento for policy committee meetings, but if anyone is available on Friday, January 18th.
If I'm back in time, I will be at that.
I'll be there as well.
You will be there. Okay, good. If you'd pass on our best wishes and thanks to the Parks volunteers. And then the other is the Firefighter of the Year. I typically say a few words at that function, but I think I get involved in somehow in that. We need to have a council presence there as well, Mr. Mayor Pro Tem.
You bet.
Okay, so I'm going to be in Florida that week, so I will not be available to attend. Councilmember Guthrie is going to be there representing us and anyone else who would like to attend. That's the 17th, I believe, is it?
Thursday.
Yeah, we'll be gone as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you'll be you and the Mayor Pro Tem will be the only ones in town. So, okay, so Jim's going to cover me on that. Okay. Staff communications? None this evening?
None this evening.
Okay, that takes us to item 16, community comments and suggestions, an opportunity for anybody in the audience to come forward and comment on any item, whether it's on the agenda or not. Okay, nothing tonight, Mr. Ross? Okay, then we'll close item 16. That takes us to item 17, which is adjournment.
So moved.